thanks to our sponsor, Nintex. If you could score an extra hour or two back in your day, would you take it? Because our friends over at Nintex want to give you a gift. The gift of time. Seriously, if you haven't checked out what Nintex has to offer lately, you definitely should. The platform built on Azure has evolved a lot. In just the past few months, the Nintex team has added new process mapping capabilities, and most recently, a new eSign capability called Nintex Sign, powered by Adobe Sign. Nintex also continues to revolutionize products you know and trust, including Nintex Workflow and Forms. With the power of Nintex, it is faster and easier for you to configure, not code, giving you valuable time back every day to sprint it however you want. Test drive the Nintex Process Cloud at nintex.com. This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 376. Today, AC and I are going to catch up on the news before Ignite, recorded live September the 10th, 2020. This episode is brought to you by AvePoint. If you like the Cloud Show, you will love the Shift Happens podcast with Microsoft MVP and regional director Dux Raymond Tsai. Each week, Dux talks with one of the industry's brightest stars about their most challenging modern workplace or digital transformation projects. He uncovers the players, organizational hurdles, and last-minute surprises that inevitably arise when ambitious people try to impact their workplace. Season 1 features FedEx, Wells Fargo, Heathrow Airport, United Airlines, and other industry leaders. Go to www.avpoint.com/blog/shifthappens or search for the hashtag Shift Happens. That's one word, hashtag Shift Happens, wherever you get your podcasts, and subscribe today. Back to the show. Good morning, sir.
How's it going, dude?
Not bad, not bad. We're in that period before Ignite where things are a little bit weird. Some news is starting to leak out about certain stuff. Some people are going a little bit early, but lots of stuff's being held back. And I think the next couple of weeks are going to be a deluge of content as we go into Ignite and interesting things. So I guess what I'm saying here is we've got some news to get through this week, but we're going to be pretty busy come Ignite with news and announcements. Although Ignite's kind of different this year, right? It's only a couple of days long, so it's going to be more, less sort of session content and more announcements and stuff. So it'll be a bit different for us over the next few weeks.
It is, and I'm curious to see if it's going to be easier for us to kind of track what's going on. I mean, first of all, not being there, it does kind of help. You don't feel like you're getting pulled in six different directions at the same time.
Yeah.
But it is, I mean, I'm seeing the, you know, there's some pre-briefings and stuff that are starting to come out for some of the media folks and then some of the insiders. And it's curious to see like some stuff they're already talking about and some of the announcements that I guess we'll talk about, some things that are being, that have been announced prior to Ignite, which you would have thought it would have happened at Ignite. But yeah, I mean, I've got to assume that there's a boatload that's coming up in the next couple weeks or whatever. I've heard a few little like rumors, you know, on the side thing where Jeff Teeper, well, this is not a private thing because he posted a comment in a running group that I'm in on Strava, and he made a comment about how he was getting ready to record his session. He's like, oh my God, you won't believe what we're going to talk about and da-da-da and da-da-da. And it's like, wow, okay. So it's just, I'm looking forward to this. It's going to be interesting to see how they pull it off. I really hope it's not like Build was and like a manufactured, hey, we're all there together, but we're really not. We're all virtual, but let's kind of fake it.
Yeah, gotcha. Jeff's got a big job this year, right? He's, this will be his, we're talking about Jeff Teeper here, the grandfather or godfather of SharePoint, whichever way you want to play it. Mm-hmm. He's been in his new job at Microsoft for over 6 months now, and he took over the team's organization as well as SharePoint and OneDrive. So he's got a lot on his plate this year, given, you know, Teams is firing on all cylinders. There's a lot for him to talk about this year. So I'm sure he's going to be busy.
Yeah, I would assume so. And I mean, I think I'm really curious to see the direction, the tone that they set. Selfishly, I'm really excited or interested to see, eager, I guess the right word, to see what tone he sets, not just talking about SharePoint and Teams in silos, but I guess if you had to ask me, what am I most eager to see is, where is he going to talk about them not in silos, but as a unification? Is he going to talk about them as a complement where one is driving the other and vice versa?
Yeah.
We know that technically we know that there's a lot of stuff behind the scenes that SharePoint, that Teams uses SharePoint for. It's part of the product. But I wonder how much of it is like really turning into where it's just kind of, is it going to really just end up being like one product and with different interfaces kind of things. And I kind of feel like that's the direction they're going, but I'd like to see like how he phrases it and how he pitches it and stuff. So,
yep. Yeah, no, definitely. Well, hey, maybe we should get him on the show to talk about it.
I'd love to. We ought to try and do that.
Taking over the universe. And I mean, he did say the other week, the other month, it's going to be bigger than Windows. So I'd love to get into more depth on that with him.
It's been what? It's been about three Ignites since we've had him on the show. We had him on the show when Ignite was in Atlanta. Sat down and interviewed him when he first came back to SharePoint.
Right. It's time.
But we've done two in Orlando since then, and then this one. So this will be, it was four years ago that we sat down and had an interview with him. So I think, Mr. Teeper, we would love to have you on the show after Ignite and just have a chat and find out, get your thoughts on stuff.
For sure. Sounds like a good plan to me.
Absolutely.
So before we move on to the meat and potatoes of the show.
We just need to get him to buy into the plan.
Oh, yeah. I'm assuming he'll be bending over backwards to come on our show, AC, shortly.
I'm sure as he's listening to this episode, he's emailing us right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Check it out. My phone's already lighting up. No, I'm just kidding.
Wow, telepathic. Before we get into the meat and potatoes, just what's been going on in your world? Are you rocking along? What's keeping you busy?
Well, this past weekend was kind of a pinch me moment.
Yes.
I got to see my logo, my Voitanos logo, on a race car on national TV last Saturday. So as I mentioned in the last episode, we sponsored a NASCAR Xfinity car. Sorry, the episode came out a day or two late. When I mentioned it in the podcast recording that we did, we come to find out they actually held the announcement for a day or two. So I had to sit on it for a day or two. But regardless, that was a lot of fun. Got a little bit of TV coverage, not a ton, but that's not the reason we did it. I did get a cool picture of the car since they've done it. And I kind of lucked out a bit because it was at a track where the passenger side of the car constantly was rubbing up against the wall.
Oh, yeah.
And they damaged the rear quarter panel so bad that the guy that I've been dealing with asked me, he's like, if this isn't salvageable, do you want this? I was like, oh my God, yes. He's like, well, how are we going to get this to you? I'm like, just drop it off at the UPS store, pay for it, send me the receipt, and I will PayPal you however much it costs to ship me the rear quarter panel. I said, let them pack it, just make it simple. And he's like, I can do that. And he sent me a picture that they cut it out. And I'm like, sweet. So
imagine rocking up to the UPS store with a quarter panel of a NASCAR going, could you ship this? I bet it's going to be weird things.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to having the wheel cut out about where my head is. And you can see in the video behind me and hanging on the wall.
Absolutely.
I'm hoping to get that. So I'm still waiting to hear back from him on how we're going to make that work. But that was one thing.
I don't know if you've noticed in the background, I'm rocking my Lego collection. Speaking of backgrounds behind us, I'm rocking my Lego collection, much like you're my inspiration for this, AC. So you'll definitely be one-upping me with a NASCAR quarter panel on the wall behind you. Although I am sporting a photographic quality large photo of the Apollo 11 launch on my wall.
Yeah, you may have me on that one. I need to do something with mine with the Lego behind me because it's like it's all on a blacktop and it's kind of hard to see it back here, especially the
Batmobile
Batman.
Is just kind of like this. Yeah.
Yeah. The Tumbler is like, it's just blocking the F1 car.
It's like a black hole in the video behind you. Anyway.
Yeah. So that was a big excitement for me this past week was doing that.
Cool.
So
that must be so exciting to see your stuff.
It was really neat. We thought the only disappointment we had was that we were supposed, so it was what NASCAR calls a throwback weekend where they take cars from previous years and the paint schemes and livery and the teams like honor the cars from way back in the day. And so my guy did it for Elliott Sadler, who used to drive a vodka. I can't remember what the vodka brand was, but it was some vodka brand. He did that, and it was a highly voted one. And they were supposed to feature him in the latter quarter of the race as like what they were doing with everybody else during the race. And of course, like the last 30 laps of the race, there ended up being like, I think there was a red flag. And so it delayed the coverage. And when they came back, they changed channels. I went to the other channel, but it was running late. And there was this huge battle for like the last 25 laps to win the race. And so they never went back to my guy who was like in 23rd. So I was like, damn, we missed out on that. But
gotcha.
I mean, like I said, that's not the reason we did the sponsorship, but it was still really cool to be sitting there with my family watching TV and like, there's our guy, there he is, right? He's right on the corner of the TV.
That's so cool.
So,
well, I look forward to seeing the quarter panel on your wall. That sounds awesome.
Me too. So what's up with you? What you been up to?
Oh my goodness. What have I been up to? All sorts of stuff, actually. I've been doing everything from, we're moving offices. So we're moving out of our current office space. And when I say moving offices, what I really mean is closing that office. We're all working from home.
Yeah.
And our lease was up, so we're closing the physical location. And so I've been dealing with all of that stuff this week. It's been kind of crazy. It's like, it's a very interesting time because, you know, you want space to all be able to get together, but everybody's working from home and not really motivated to be in an office together with people, right?
Right.
Obviously. And so I'm sure we'll get back to it, but just not yet. And so, yeah, we've given up the space. So I'm actually, Bill Gates is taking over the space. So he's desperate to move in, apparently. And
is that where he's putting his pandemic business? Like where he's being able to make money off the pandemic? Is that
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, they've already started rolling in the microchipping machines. They've got all of the experts on tracking people already there. Mm. They've got Roger Stone is coming up with a new conspiracy theory stuff that they're going to use to roll this out as soon as the vaccine's available.
Is that going to be in the office, that the room that we used to record the show that one time?
Yeah.
Oh, sweet. Yeah. Well, they got a great. You have a great view of all the data coming in from the water too. I mean, that's going to be great as well. You're going to tag all those people. I mean,
yeah. I mean, it's also where the where one of the major fiber backbones for the entire country is, and they've already got taps into that, so they can tell what you're talking about already. It's going to be huge.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. That's good. That's a good business.
Yeah, it's going to a good cause.
I tell you, Bill is just so sharp, man. He's always ahead of the curve.
He's firing on all cylinders, that's for sure. Yeah. No, he's his private office.
And that was
not the Gates Foundation.
Man, that was our BS segment for the show.
That's yeah. Yeah, tinfoil hat wearers, don't worry. I'm just joking. he is moving in, but he's got private offices. He sort of manages private affairs that are elsewhere in the complex, but they've also taken over that space. So anyway, I've been dealing with that this week, a bunch of moving stuff we've got to deal with in bits and pieces. And then this weekend, I'm heading over the hills to, well, yeah, in a long story, I'm going away for a couple of nights over the other side of the hills for just to get out of town, playing golf with a couple of friends. Socially distanced golf and just getting out of town for a bit, sort of to do a bit of thinking and getting a bit. I want to say fresh air, but the wildfires are over there, so chances are it's going to be worse air. So it's not that fresh. Yeah, I'll come back.
That's true.
I'll come back fully baked from all of the smoke. How about that? Yeah.
Sound like you just smoke like two packs of cigarettes in a day.
Yeah, I'm going to look on the podcast next week like this. So that's my weekend coming up.
Oh, man.
Hey, but how about we punch into some news? We've got some good stuff coming up before Ignite. So should we get into it?
This episode is sponsored by ShareGate. Does managing cloud spending keep you awake at night? Trying to figure out how your budget is being spent is enough to give anyone goosebumps. Our friends at ShareGate understand that most cloud architects and developers want to create great applications, not count dollars and cents. That's why they built ShareGate Overcast, to help admin control Azure costs through transparency, collaboration, and simplicity. With anomaly detection, AI-powered cost forecasting, as well as personalized cost recommendations in a unified Azure governance platform, you'll see results from the moment you connect Overcast to your tenant. To start a free trial of ShareGate Overcast so you can get back to building big ideas, visit sharegate.com/overcast_CS. This podcast is brought to you by Raygun. Raygun provides full-stack error, crash, and performance monitoring for tech teams. Whether you're a software engineer looking to diagnose and resolve issues with greater speed and accuracy, a product manager drowning in bug reports, or you're just concerned you're losing customers to poor quality online experiences, Raygun can provide you with the answers. Get full-stack error and performance monitoring in one place. The next time you're struggling to replicate errors and performance issues in your codebase, think Raygun. Head over to raygun.com and get up and running within minutes and dramatically improve the online experiences of your users. And we're back.
All right, AC, probably the first thing we should talk about here is what's coming up at Ignite, because there's been a little bit of movement on this in the last week or so. Probably the big news around Ignite is registrations are open. So I don't know if anybody knows, but although it's all virtual this year, you still have to register. It costs nothing, but you have to go register. and that gets you into their system, and then you can go take a look at the, you can go get sessions and put them on your calendar and all that sort of stuff. But they've also launched the session catalog to go along with that. So you can, without registering, you can take a look at the session catalog, but with registering, you can go add them to your calendar and do all that sort of stuff, I think.
Yeah, I saw that link for the session catalog about 15 minutes before we started doing the podcast. So I haven't had a chance to go through and see anything they're talking about. Of course, the stuff that is the most interesting that you're going to see won't show up until after the keynotes, because that's when they're going to announce the stuff, and that's the sessions you want to go see.
All the embargoed content, yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to have to, we're not going to see that stuff just yet, but I mean, you can still see all the sessions that are there. And so I'm very much looking forward to doing what I always do, which is to go through the session catalog, pick a bunch of sessions that I want to watch. I go watch about 2 out of the 100 that I end up bookmarking and try and download and save them to put them on my iPad that I will end up never watching. But I'm looking forward to going through the ritual of what I do with every single conference, it seems.
Well, hopefully it's a little easier this year because it's only 2 days long, right?
Yeah.
But stuff gets repeated a lot for different time zones.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than having to pick through 4 days of content, you only have to pick through 2. And for the most part, it's going to be all marketing-y jazz hands stuff, right? So it's going to be a little easier than, you know, deep technical content, I think. Okay, riddle me this though, AC. At the top of the session browser, there is a toggle that says space available.
Oh my God.
What does that mean?
They're doing this again. So,
I mean, I get it. If they're streaming over Teams, maybe they can't have more than 600 people or whatever at a stream or whatever the number happens to be. I forget what the number is now these days. But you can do like 10,000 people with a Teams event or something, can't you? So like, what's the deal with space available?
So my understanding, this is the same thing they had back at Build. And my understanding was that these were sessions that they had, like for, I can only remember one example. They did a Minecraft programming class or session. But in that session, they were giving out accounts for people to be able to log in to get a developer account to be able to do stuff with it. And it was doing like a hands-on lab. And so there was a username and a password. And so it was like build attendee 001, build attendee 002, build attendee 003. And they all had the same password.
Hmm.
And so the guidance was go try and pick an account where that last three numbers is something between 0 and 100. And if it says it's already in use, just go pick another one. So they wanted to make sure that there were only 100 people that could enter the session so they wouldn't have this influx of 1,000 people and 900 of them getting ticked off they couldn't do it. So there was a limited thing in that sense. But I'm with you. It's a little awkward for a virtual event, like space available. Like, I mean, unless it's like a roundtable kind of a thing or a Q&A kind of a thing, it's just weird. This is the part that I don't like about what companies are doing, where they're trying to take these events that are usually in person, they're moving them into a virtual experience, but they're trying to marry the experience of being there in person and virtual, where I just think you got to, at some point, you just got to cut the cord and just be like, let's embrace 100% this virtual thing and not try and act like it's something that it's not. And I don't know if that's what they're doing. It sure feels like it in that sense, but it's the one that was the part of like that of Ignite that I didn't, or of Inspire that I didn't like, of Build that I didn't like. And I thought that GitHub just, like when GitHub did their event, I think it was called Satellite, they just nailed it. It was like going, hey, look, man, this is virtual.
Go to town.
We're not in San Francisco. So
I tell you what, I've just been browsing the catalog while we've been talking about this. And my top highlight, sort of, this is the one I'm going to go to, and I'm not going to understand a single word of it. It's called Microsoft Fignite. It is the Finnish community leaders summarizing all the greatest solutions and insights on the Microsoft platforms. So it's basically like, it's, Inves is not in it, unfortunately, I think. Oh, hold on. Let's see. Vesa is not in it. It's people from the Finnish community basically summarizing what's happening at Ignite. I want to tune into that. I love the Finns. I think that'll be hilarious. I'm not going to understand any of it, but I reckon it'll be awesome. Yeah.
I'm scrolling through some of these sessions, and it's some of the stuff is just so interesting that I wish you could toggle like I want the technical sessions and not the ones that are supposed to make me feel good.
Yeah. I don't want a session that's going to rub my shoulders. I want one that's going to slap me across the face and tell me how to do stuff. But we'll see. Yeah.
I'll take a pass on yoga, seated with the BK Yoga Club. No offense to the person who's presenting that, but that's not why I'm tuning into Ignite.
Yeah, gotcha. So you know how we give Vesa grief about sometimes his Finglish is quite funny?
Mm-hmm.
So I reckon Fignite will be pretty awesome.
Oh, I found that session. Laura I can't ever say her last name.
Kokonaran?
That Yes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Laura, if you're listening.
I don't know if I got it right.
I have a hard time saying her name, but.
Yeah, she's great. So go check out the session catalog for Ignite. Go sign up, go register. You'll get an email. You'll be on their list to get, you know, details about how to tune into stuff when it goes live, all that sort of stuff. And you'll be all ready to go.
A bit of big news that came out that I expect we're going to see some stuff in the session catalog. I want to dive in there. Is Microsoft this week, they announced or went live with, they took the Fluid framework and they made it open source. And they made it as an open source project where anybody can go kind of jump in and take a look at it. Now, this is relatively fresh off the press
by
the time we're recording. So it's a little, I'm not entirely sure what open source means to them because I'm pretty sure they're still working on it, but I'm not sure if it's how much community stuff they're taking. This one's interesting to me. I mean, Fluid framework specifically is interesting to me. And I don't know what to think of it just yet. I mean, I've got some candid thoughts, but I don't, you know, trying to be funny about it, but I don't think that really helps. I'm so confused because so many people that are inside Microsoft are speaking of this like it's the second coming of Jesus when it comes to office documents. Because I mean, you've even got like Miguel de Acasa just going through and going, oh, people remember things before Fluid and after Fluid. I'm like, so we have BF and AF now? I mean, AF. Oops. So.
Well, we've got BC and AC, right? We've got before COVID and after COVID, I think. So wait, now we've got.
We got to get to after COVID first.
Correct. Yeah, I guess we're still DC during COVID.
Some people think we're, anyway.
AC, DC, and BC.
I like AC/DC.
Yeah, exactly. Akadaka.
The thing that really that I don't really get about Fluid is that like, and I said this as a joke in a little internal forum that you and I are on, and I'll say it here, and I'm trying to prove a point, is that to me, Fluid framework, I want to explain my point in just a second, but to me, Fluid framework is very much like Cold Fusion, not the programming tech from Allaire, but I mean like the actual like nuclear thing. And the reason why I say that is because it feels like it's got so much promise and it looks great in these game demos or in movies and it has a great story around it. The promise is really great and everything, but it's never there for me to use. And it's really in the future of it, it's always right around the corner, but in reality, it never is. And so I'm very critical of the team because it feels like they started talking about this way before they should have. We said the same thing back at Build Conference, said the same thing back at the last Ignite Conference. And it just doesn't feel like it's there yet. And now what I'm seeing is that's part of the open source and where they currently are. All the demos are still games. And I'm like, you got to give me something you're not selling it. You're just not selling it for me yet. And just going, oh, just trust me. I'm like, nah, I don't do that, Microsoft. I don't do that anymore.
Yeah. You know, when somebody's, I could summarize this by saying, you know, this techie, there are techies that are so excited about a particular piece of technology that they're like, this is going to be the biggest thing since, you know, sliced bread, right? And then they come out and talk about it and you're like, what? I don't get it. Like, why? And they're so excited about the tech that they've forgotten to explain the why.
Yeah.
And nobody's really along for the ride because they don't understand why. I feel like it's falling into that trap where I'm sure the technology behind it is awesome, like is really good, really interesting, and quite clever, and probably will change the game for some people who need that. But they've sort of skipped to the how awesome it is part and not explained, have you ever had these challenges? Hey, look, we've come up with this amazing way to address those problems, and here's the technology that you use to do it, right? They haven't gone, start with why.
They haven't. And a lot of the media has kind of just bought into what they're saying and they're just kind of stopped. Like even The Verge, I put an article in our show notes, The Verge calls Microsoft's new Fluid Office document is Google Docs on steroids. Like, so you're saying I need Google Docs, but I want to embed it in my app, but I want it to be Office apps? I'm like, no, that's not what it is. And I know that that's not what it is. I'm like, this still doesn't explain. You're still telling me how great everything is. And we're in the election season in the United States. Feels like a candidate's just telling me how great everything is when I'm kind of looking around like,
doesn't match reality.
What are you watching? What are you watching?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they're doing themselves a disservice because I actually think it's probably quite interesting technology, like for the right people and in the right scenario and all that. It's probably pretty cool. But they're not explaining that very well. So we'll see what happens at Ignite this year. I think we'll hear more about it at Build next year because it's more sort of techie oriented. But, you know, they say it's a framework for being able to build more collaborative applications, right? I'm like, okay, great. but like, what problems does that solve? What are developers trying to build today where they're banging their heads against a wall going, I wish I could build more collaborative applications more seamlessly? And then show us those and talk about how this addresses it, right? We've spoken about this on the show before, and we sound pretty negative about it, I think, but I want to be positive about it. I don't see the why yet.
I want to be positive about it if there's something I'm just not getting. I want to be positive about it if there's something I'm not getting. And I think what you said was really nails it on the head, and that is they've forgotten to explain what this is and why I should care about it, why it applies to me. What is it going to make that things are so different? Why are people like Miguel de Caza on Twitter saying there's going to be before and there's an after Fluid, and you will all remember that moment? Like, I don't understand why when the internet came out and everyone said, this is going to be a game changer. Why? Because it's called instant communication. We're going to be able to be networked a lot better. We're going to be able to have access to everything. Think about being able to do all this different stuff. And all that. That's the kind of explanation that I need. That's the kind of explanation that I need to have with this. And it's something that I don't feel like I need to look at my current business problem and say, like, where would this actually solve a problem that I have, or would make a scenario or a situation that I have a much better experience? Show me a pain point that I deal with today. Collaborating on an Office doc, I can kind of do that today. Collaborating on a Google doc, I kind of do that today.
Yeah.
The features and being able to do that stuff in all of my apps, I fear right now, this may not be accurate, but I fear right now that we're just at this part where it just still feels like the echo chamber in Redmond loves this thing, and they're suffering from groupthink, and they haven't been able to explain it well outside of that just yet. That's where I feel like I am right now.
Yeah, I agree. They're starting to make more noise about it, so I guess we'll see.
We will see. What you got for us next?
I've got another big announcement, but leading into that, let me just make sure we've got some dramatic theme music. One moment.
Speaking of Bill Gates.
speaking of chipping people. The Jedi Project.
Mm.
We've talked about this on the show before. This is a massive, massive contractual win contract, I should say, called Jedi, US government Pentagon contract, worth up to, or starting at, I guess, $10 billion. But more importantly, kind of setting the scene for cloud providers with the Pentagon going forward. Now, there's been a ongoing process, and Microsoft won the contract, and Amazon have challenged that. And their argument is Trump doesn't like Amazon because Jeff Bezos owns the Washington Post and all of that sort of stuff, and so there's politics involved and things. That's the argument that Amazon are making, and that it was unfairly awarded. But we got news this last week on September the 4th that the Pentagon says it will stick with Microsoft for the $10 billion contract. And basically they've gone back and done and I quote, they've completed its comprehensive reevaluation of the Jedi cloud proposals and determined that Microsoft's proposal continues to represent the best value to the government, the Pentagon said in a statement. So this is great news for Microsoft, right? This is really, really solid news for them, and is one more step towards resolving this. Now, I say one more step because Amazon will continue to challenge this, right? And they've already come out with what's considered a scathing blog post in the press, which basically says they've been unfairly treated. It's all political, yada, yada, yada. They've given it to Microsoft to basically stick it to Amazon. And, that's their side of the story. I'm sure Microsoft see it differently, but who really knows? So I guess we'll see where this happens next. I guess Amazon will take it to the next step. They'll probably legally challenge it in court some more and keep pushing, and it'll take years to resolve. But in the meantime, I believe this will mean that the injunction against Microsoft moving forward on the contract will be lifted at some point soon, hopefully, and they'll be able to continue working on it to sort of advance the work that they need to do to meet the contract's terms, if you know what I mean.
With the size of this contract, it's not surprising that, and I'm not saying that they do or they don't. I mean, I'm not even going to try and go into legal impact of this whole thing because I haven't really paid attention, nor do I really care too much about it. But with the size of this contract, I think it's like $10 billion over the next 20 years or something.
Yeah.
Something like that. It's in that kind of ballpark. There's nothing for Amazon to lose to just keep fighting this. I mean, even if they have no leg to stand on, keep fighting it, because if you can get just if you can get some of that business out of it, then it's worth it.
Yeah.
I mean, the lawyers are loving it. So, I mean,
they're the ones that are going to be making the most out of this for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what I find really interesting about this is you might say, well, what does this really mean for us? And, you know, we've had some side conversations with friends that work in these kinds of things at Microsoft. And, you know, one of them made a comment the other day, which I thought was really interesting. He said, no, this is actually really good because the JEDI contract is pushing Microsoft to invest in certain areas around things like identity that will be applicable to everybody else. And mm-hmm. I'm not going to rattle off those areas that he mentioned, but Microsoft are making investments in things that will help everybody else. They're adding new features to meet the terms of this contract that are needed. And so it's sort of pushing them in investing in those things faster than they mm-hmm. would have, which is going to benefit us all.
Yeah. It's going to be a huge catalyst for pushing Microsoft in certain areas and directions that all you need is a customer to get you to do something and say, like, this feature is important to me. Like we talk about all the time on the show, here's a new feature in Azure. Like, why in the world would somebody need that? I'm sure somebody does, because there's a reason why they built it. So some big customer needed this feature, and it's interesting, similar stuff to this. They're going to need certain investments in identity. They're going to need certain investments in security and maybe in backup or
reliability whatever it happens to be.
Yeah. Things that I can't, ECM, stuff that I can't think of right now, but there's stuff that they're going to need. And you've now got a project to be able to focus on that and be able to allocate funds towards it and stuff and have a reason to focus on those things.
You know, having worked in product for a little while and been a part of a number of prioritization meetings, both at Microsoft and at Hyperfish and LiveTiles and things, the conversation must have been very interesting when, you know, that the product managers for these different areas came into the prioritization meeting and said, we want to build XYZ and ABC and, you know, all of this. And our feature list is like 30 pages long. And the product manager was like, that's very interesting. How much revenue is attached to these feature investments that you're asking us to do? And everybody turns around in the meeting and he said, $10 billion. And everybody's okay, top of the list.
Oh, yeah, we're also on the hook for it.
Yep. I bet that was an interesting conversation.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, so JEDI.
Cool. We are starting to see some roll-up posts coming from different products and product groups at Microsoft, which is kind of getting us almost in tune, or kind of like, you know, let's recap what we've done over the last X amount of time since we were last together. One of these is the SharePoint Roadmap Pit Stop for August 2020. It goes in line with a podcast episode from the IntraZone by Microsoft, which is run by Mark Cashman and Chris McNulty. And they interviewed Lincoln Damaris from Microsoft, who was in charge of Microsoft Lists, the product, the new app that is now inside of higher priority inside of Teams, inside of SharePoint. This roll-up post, I'm not going to walk through all of this, but there's a lot of stuff in this. It's got a very small scroll bar. So there's a lot of stuff that you can actually go take a look at. But you can see there's a lot of investments that Microsoft has been making in Microsoft 365 and specifically in SharePoint that are really influenced by what we're dealing with this year. There's new site templates that are focused on education, Azure CDN caching for SharePoint and OneDrive video. So a lot of focus on delivering video through SharePoint, which whole work from home thing makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
They are re-emphasizing the whole retirement of SharePoint 2010 workflows, being able to have data and get site data usage out of SharePoint. Still fairly minimal data that they provide you on how much people are using SharePoint, like unique viewers, site visits, average time spent per user. Still fairly limited on the stuff that you get, but some stuff that's there. There's some updates too that they have in this about cross-product updates, the things with SharePoint and Teams together, SharePoint and OneDrive together, and then some other stuff like Yammer even has a call out in this post as well about the Yammer discovery feed. So there's a bunch of Vizio.
I'm alive.
How is it going to go? You'll be stoned dead in the morning.
I'm horribly hurt.
There's a bunch of stuff that's in here as well. And then also there's some teasers that they're playing out for September 2020. Things like the first teaser is a new integrate menu for Microsoft Lists. Don't know the details around that. And then you can also manage how long guests can access SharePoint and OneDrive. So end user stuff. Oh, improvements to the image column in Lists as well, where you can say like, you know, like on your phone when you can go to like post you say you want to post a picture to like a text that you're having with someone and it's like, Do you want to take a picture or do you want to use an existing picture?
Oh, yeah.
So now when you want to upload something, it gives you that option right out of the box.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Very cool. Slightly tangent dev topic. One that I just thought I'd call out. Anybody that's doing graph development might find this really interesting. Microsoft has announced a public preview of being able to subscribe to change notifications, aka webhooks, except now getting the response via a Azure Event Hub instead, right? So You subscribe for things, you want to be notified when certain changes happen inside the graph. Now, instead of having to provide a webhook that the graph calls you back on, you can now subscribe to those and get data change notifications through Event Hubs. And I spoke, so the post is by Vincent Breit, and I spoke to Vincent quite a while back about this, that one of my biggest frustrations with webhooks is how flaky they are, right? Mm-hmm. If you're offline for some reason and you miss a webhook, you can stop getting webhooks. If there's a bug in your application or something and you end up returning a 500 error back to Microsoft when they call your webhook, boom, your subscription's gone, all that sort of stuff. And so there's no reliability of, you know, there's no reliability or very low reliability, and there's no guaranteed delivery of messages. Whereas When Microsoft able to put the change notification on effectively a message queue, you can have a bit more confidence in the deliverability of those messages and the reliability of those messages getting to you. You can roll out a new version of your app and you could have, you know, 15 seconds of downtime as it rolls a new release, if you don't care about that, and you'll be confident that you're not going to miss messages, if that makes sense. So I really like it.
It's a great way for them to handle it too. I mean, from the graph team, it's going to simplify I think it simplifies their life a little bit. I mean, they're going to have to maintain the thing they call change notifications, which are really just webhooks. But they're going to have to maintain that for a while because that's what was originally introduced. And this Event Grid support is just in preview. But I mean, yeah, it's more reliable. You leverage something that already exists in Azure and a team that specializes in the deliverability and take advantage of it that way. I mean, you're already probably using something. If you're using Graph and you're signing up for webhooks, you probably have something like an Azure function. Most of you probably have an Azure function that's listening for those webhook requests. In fact, you even had templates that were even set up in Azure Functions to handle the subscription and renewal subscription and receiving the posts. So hooking this up, instead of going straight to Graph, but being able to leverage Event Grid for easier deliverability, not just inside of Azure resources, but outside as well, makes a lot of sense.
Yep. I totally agree. I really like it. I think it's awesome. I hate webhooks. I love queues. What more can I say? I'm weird.
That's funny. My business is founded, or not founded, but my business is like driven by webhooks from multiple systems.
Don't you ever worry about what you miss?
I don't miss anything though. That's the thing that I find that's so interesting about Graph is I have that conversation with people over on the Graph side and they're like, oh yeah, but webhooks are brittle and all this kind of stuff. I'm like, that's funny because I use that from, and I know some people aren't going to recognize some of the names I'm going to use here, But I don't get that with Drip. I don't get that with Wistia, a huge video delivery service. I don't get that with Kajabi.
How do you know?
Here's some names you'll remember because I can see the list of all the stuff that's there and I've actually done reconciliation for it before.
Huh.
And I get notified via email, like with Drip. If my webhook fails, if they have problem delivering something to my webhook,
you get told.
I get an email and it tells me we had trouble delivering it. If we continue to have trouble for the next day, we're going to delete the subscription. So
well,
they let me
nice.
Know about it.
That's nice. Microsoft Graph doesn't do that.
And here's another one too. You know, two of them that do work just fine? PayPal and Stripe. I'm sure people have heard of those.
Yeah, fair enough.
And I can export with Stripe. I know I can also export the list of all the webhooks that it sent me, and I can compare that to what I've received.
Mm.
Lo and behold, those have the same number of rows in an Excel spreadsheet.
Well, that's useful. I mean, Graph, you can't get any of that data out of. You can't tell if your webhooks are being fired.
Mm-hmm.
You can't tell if they're working. You can't pull data out to go, here's what I've sent, and here's, you can compare that to something else. And in high volume, there's no, you know, we couldn't rely on it for certain things because you're just not sure. And let's be honest, like change notifications in Graph is dodgy at best, right? Like it's, okay, here's a classic. You subscribe for change notifications on a user, somebody changes their photo, don't get a hook for that. Changes their first name or mobile number, you get a hook for that. So it depends on the attribute that changes.
Sometimes for the mobile, you don't get that all the time.
And sometimes
they say you do,
quite a
but
while after.
I have a lab that shows it does it 45 minutes sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Now in their defense, they did say that has been fixed. That was a problem that was going on like early pandemic, but that's been fixed since then.
So yeah, but you don't get it for photo, for example. You don't get it for, I'm pretty sure you don't get it for like about me that comes from SharePoint and all this sort of stuff. So it's not an exact science.
Yeah. No.
Mm. Cool.
Cool ad. I have another one here. This is something that happened back on September the 1st. So, I mean, we're about 10 days past this on the day we're recording this, but the Microsoft Patterns and Practices Group, they held a virtual conference on September the 1st. There's a bunch of pre-recorded content that a bunch of people did. They published it or they delivered the content, like they streamed it live while they were doing the show. A lot of people attended. I think over 2,000 people registered for it. Got really good ratings for it. There's a lot of really good free content. Nice short bite-sized sessions that a bunch of learning stuff there. The PMP group, I'm part of the PMP group, but I wasn't involved in the virtual workshop. I get questions why I didn't submit a session, and it's strictly my fault. I didn't realize that. Well, it's my problem with Teams. They were in one channel talking about it in a channel that I wasn't in. And then I didn't see it until it was much later. And when I finally saw it, it was like, oh, you guys are doing something? Like, yeah, the deadline for submitting stuff has already passed. I'm like, that's my problem of being a poor user of Teams. So that's not a Teams complaint. That's just me having a hard time. I have a hard time with Teams. So
yeah, me too. I miss stuff all the time in it. Mm. Okay, finally, before we move on, there's a new blog post. I won't go into all the detail about it, but it's from a principal program manager, Anne Hamilton, who is talking about how do you build a culture of reliability in an organization like Azure at the scale that Azure is dealing with. And so what they're really getting to is how do you build a culture that instills the values of reliability and performance and things when new people join? And they just go through, you know, I won't go through it, but they go through how they enable this, like how they onboard new people into the Azure organization, the engineering organization. How do they do that at sort of scale and a global company? And how do you go sort of from, they call it crawl, walk, and run, right? So sort of beginner, intermediate, and advanced levels. And how do you roll that out across the world? And how do you do it when COVID comes along and all that sort of stuff? And I just think it's a great sort of little behind-the-scenes look at how Microsoft are doing this kind of stuff. So if you're interested in reading that, there's a nice sort of long blog post about it that you can go take a look at.
Mm, that's interesting. It's kind of, I like those, like how we're doing business kind of things, kind of peek behind the curtain stuff, which—
Yeah, a look in the sausage factory.
Yeah. Well, sometimes I don't want to see too much, right? But
true.
I like these kind of posts, like the one that I did with how Amazon does deployments or the CI and CD stuff last week.
That yes.
Was,
yeah,
that
exactly.
Kind of stuff is fun.
I love seeing that stuff, yeah.
Cool.
All right, I see. How about we move on?
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework. Back to the show.
It's pick time.
I'm feeling picky.
I feel like somebody spiked my decaf coffee. I'm off caffeine at the moment. I have been since October last year. So it's coming up almost a year with no caffeine. And I reckon somebody slipped a shot into my decaf this morning because feeling a little buzzy about the picks.
It might have been our pre-podcast conversation, too.
Doing the whole
Beavis. Oh, I wish you guys could have seen the video of that one.
Yeah, we'll get a screenshot of that after the show. But what have you got for us this week for your pick, AC?
I've been sitting on this for weeks, and I've been wanting to share this, but I keep pulling it back. Every time I put it out there, I'm like, let me pull this one back. Because I'm trying to be a little more theme with our other picks. This post is titled The UX of Lego Interface Panels. So, you know those, well, you do. And for those of our listeners who are also Lego fiends or freaks like the rest, like the two of us, you know the little 2x2 slanted pieces that are like the computer terminal or the terminal for like a ship they got or a car or something like that.
Yeah.
So they explain, they go through this and they explain like how they came about all of this stuff and how there's like it's almost like a Venn diagram too. They or a Gartner quadrant that they have for it.
Like the Gartner Magic Quadrant.
Yeah, organized or chaotic or no screen or all screen. It's really cool, but it goes through the whole like lineage of building these little things and how when it really came about, like a long, long time ago, there was a B-17 bomber from the United States that did a belly landing. I think it was on an aircraft carrier or just on a runway. Did a belly landing and they found that the reason why that happened was that the pilots had a hard time finding the control that they needed because they didn't have like a standardized set of icons. And so they started to work with trying to come up with these standardized icons to make it easier to kind of see what was going on. So you have, instead of just like where we had just a bunch of buttons all over the place, like you'd look at like an old computer and it would just be a bunch of buttons with lights next to it with like a label.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't like having to study an interface. Instead, it is, I should be able to look at an interface and what I'm looking for should be able to stand out to me without me having to read the interface and comprehend what's there. And so it kind of shows the lineage going across of like, you know, you have different switches that are for different things. Like this, like when you want to stop something, that's a universal like octagon with a stop sign. Or when you want to turn something on, you generally have the power button that's like the circle with the bar through it. It's really cool about how you have identifies the different textures and positions and operation, color, shapes, size of buttons that they're using. They're just standardized across things. It's really cool. And they're kind of comparing all the different Lego interfaces to it. So
man,
I found it really interesting.
This is fascinating because it's a real hybrid of how important user interface design is and the user, what the difference between user experience and design is. And one of the interesting stories they bring up in here is in 2015 that Ford recalled 13,500 Lincoln SUVs because drivers were speeding down the motorway and were suddenly mistakenly shutting off their engine when they tried to activate sports mode in their car because the sports mode button and the engine on-off switch were right beside each other. And so, you know, you're driving down the road, you sort of take a glance and you push the button at the bottom and it turns off the engine instead.
Yeah.
But they show how that's impacted and how Lego have interpreted that in their design of their UIs that they put on these Lego pieces.
Tesla's got the same problem. And it's still, to the best of my knowledge, it still isn't fixed. I am terrified to wash my windows when I'm driving down the road. So the stalk behind the steering wheel, there's a stalk on either side. There's a stalk on either side. And one of them is for like the drivetrain. So switching it neutral, park, drive, reverse.
Yeah.
And the other one is for, you know, on the left side is for turn signal. Well, both of them have a button on the end of them. And the one that's on the drivetrain one, and the stalks are identical in terms of like the size, the feel, and everything. The one on the driver's, on the right side of the steering wheel and on a left drive car, so a North American car, you push that button in, that puts the car in park. On the one on the left-hand side, you push that button in, washer fluid comes out. So you're driving down the road, you want to do washer fluid? I'm terrified I'm going to throw the car in park when I'm going 65 down the road.
Surely it won't let you do that.
I've been scared. I'm driving a loner right now because mine's in the shop. And so I'm like, I want to try it with the loner. So it happens with the loner. I don't want to do it with either one of them.
Yeah, there'll be a large clank and there'll be a couple of cogs left on the road behind you.
Yes. I don't have a gearbox though in a Tesla.
Is that not what park? It doesn't engage like a fixed gear into the drivetrain somewhere?
I don't know exactly what.
I don't know what it does.
I don't know. I think it just is a pinch on the rear rotors, like a hard pinch on the rotors, because there's a separate, looks like a small brake pad on the rear rotors that you can hear it just kind of, it's like this mechanical kind of
Yeah, but that's the parking brake. Yeah, most cars have that.
But that's when you put it in park.
Does that happen in a Tesla, does it? Because a lot of cars, they have they have park mode, and then you can also put on the parking brake, which is different.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No, so we don't have a parking brake.
I see.
We have park.
Right. So it is probably all one and the same thing. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe don't push that button in your car.
So how about you? What kind of pick you got for us this week?
Okay, so staying on the Flight Sim 2020 theme that I've been on recently.
Oh, I love this.
There is a new pack of downloadable, I want to say aircraft, but they're not really aircraft. They're more like spaceships and stuff that you can add to Flight Sim. So it is official. You can now download a X-Wing, a TIE Fighter, the Millennium Falcon, the Top Gun F-14, that's an aircraft, a Snowspeeder, the USS Enterprise, and a DeLorean, which doesn't fit spacecraft or the aircraft category, and you can fly them in Flight Sim 2020. What's interesting about this is these are downloadable content from a third party. So Microsoft Flight Sim 2020 has been built with add-ons in mind. So you can go and add, this is not like hacking the game. You can download this content, drop it in a particular folder, load up your game, boom, you're flying an X-Wing.
That's too cool.
Pretty sweet.
I have not done it yet. I've got to install it. You got it? Okay. Have you gotten this yet?
Flight Sim 2020?
No. Oh, yeah, I know you have it, but yeah.
No, I haven't got the pack yet.
I need you to, are you going to do it?
Yeah, I'll do it. I'll do it for you.
Okay. All right. So for our listeners, like CJ is like, when he went flying, he's like, where do you want to go? And so I gave him like a list of like, I want to see this. First of all, before I do that, did you ever fly the 747 down in the Grand Canyon?
Not the 747. I flew a turboprop down the Grand Canyon, but not a 747.
Okay, yeah, saw that one out. Go get the snow speeder and go into the sand dunes of Africa or in the Sahara.
Sahara, yeah, that's nice. I did notice in the video, this is one disappointing fact. I didn't hear like with the TIE fighter, I didn't hear like, you know, that sort of the TIE fighter sound. Was that a very good TIE fighter sound? I don't know.
That was
probably
pretty
sounded
good.
Like an elk being run over. but I didn't hear that. And, you know, so I'll have to go test it out because in the game it might have better sounds than the video I saw. But I'll go, yeah. Although doing the snow speeder down the Grand Canyon would be pretty cool.
Snow speeder in the Grand Canyon, snow speeder like in African or desert dunes would be really cool.
Landing the Millennium Falcon on the space shuttle landing facility at KFC. KSC, not FC.
Yeah.
Because you landed like, could I get a six pack of wings and a couple of thighs to go, thanks?
Chewie wants four whole chickens.
Punch that chicken, Chewie.
Is there any aircraft carriers in Flight Sim?
Not yet. I don't believe so. No.
God, put the Millennium Falcon or a fleet of X-Wings on the
air. That'd be so sick. Yeah, that'd be so sick. Although that's cool. Feel like, yeah, landing the Millennium Falcon on the top of the VAB or something like that would be pretty awesome. Mm.
Oh, like the guy that did that for the tower. And I've got to get this game.
I'm wondering about the flight mechanics of these things because I suspect you have to fly them like a regular aircraft, not the physics of them in Star Wars, right? So like, I don't think you could just like vertically land the Millennium Falcon, for example. You probably have to like take off like an airplane.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
I'll check it out. So, okay.
Still cool stuff.
I have a few missions for this weekend.
Send me screenshots.
Snow speeder in the Sahara, snow speeder down the Grand Canyon, probably X-Wing down the Grand Canyon. And I could pretend that there's like the little hole at the end of the Grand Canyon that I've got to get the missile in.
Yes!
And then the Millennium Falcon at the space shuttle landing facility at Kennedy Space Center.
Hell yes.
Oh, so
yes,
good.
Yes. DeLorean, land the DeLorean on SpaceX landing pad one.
Oh yeah, that's good. We don't need roads where we're going. Awesome. Okay. So yeah, mission acquired. Target acquired. I will do that.
Your mission, should you choose to accept it.
Nice. All right, I say good picks, man. Good picks. I look forward to chatting again next week in the run-up to Ignite. Just for those of you who are, I think Ignite is like the week of the 22nd, 21st. It's a couple of weeks away.
Double check. It is the week. It's the week of the 22nd through the 24th.
So this episode September. Will come out on the 15th,
yeah.
I think. So the episode after that, we should be in Ignite.
Mm-hmm. If you do that.
We'll talk about the news.
Cool. Lots of stuff coming.
Sounds good, man. All right. Stay safe. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, man. You do the same.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in your favorite podcast app. It helps people find out about our show and grow our audience, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide us a link so we can play it on the show. You can also subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, the Google Play Store, Spotify, or your podcatcher of choice. And finally, sign up for our mailing list by heading over to microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll get notices of each episode as well as the show notes sent to you directly each week. We'll be back with a new episode next week. Thanks for listening.